Support for First Coast Connect is provided in part by Baptist Health.
Good morning. I'm Ann Schindler, and this is First Coast Connect. Today, calling the direction of downtown at best debatable, the City Council President calls for greater scrutiny. We're going to talk to Mayor Donna Deegan about that, and we'll also take your calls and questions live in our monthly Ask the Mayor segment. You can call us at 904-549-2937. You can also email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, or you can message us on social media. And you can also watch our live stream on our Facebook page or the First Coast Connect YouTube channel. Mayor Donna Deegan, welcome back.
Thank you, Anne.
Some big topics to discuss today, but let's start with some congratulations, some felicitations. Your daughter got married this weekend.
She did. She did. So unless you're going to ask me about flowers or food or DJs or honeymoon plans or any of those things, I'm not sure I have a thought left in my head.
You must be totally overwhelmed and just tired.
You know, frankly, this mayor stuff is a whole lot easier than being mother of the bride. So I'm actually, it was a relief to walk back into the office after everything was done, but it was absolutely beautiful. She's a stunning, lovely girl, and everything went to, as she said, beyond her wildest dreams. So that's all a mother of the bride can hope. And now back in trying to lock in.
Yeah. Well, the pictures look great. We, of course, wish them a long and happy life together.
Thank you.
So, all right, let's turn to some tough stuff. Yesterday, the Jacksonville City Council President Ron Salem announced he was creating a special committee on the future of downtown. What do you think sparked this?
Look, there's been a lot of discussion, as you've seen, I'm sure. Nate Monroe wrote a big column. Others have certainly remarked about the progress or their perceived lack thereof progress downtown. I understand some of the frustrations. But I would like to remind folks that I've been in office for 10 months. And I have made downtown a priority, and I've said that repeatedly since we came in. We have really embraced some of the challenges that the DIA has faced, and also, you know, have tried to celebrate what successes they have had. But we've put some processes in place to create, you know, what we've called chop-chop projects and some things that we're trying to move forward more quickly. People are starting to see cranes downtown. We are working hard on those riverfront parks that are starting to develop. The Gateway Jacks complex that's in the core of downtown, because I know that's where most of the focus is why would we not see more in the core of downtown, should break ground in August or September. There's another plan for a grocery store down there. There are so many things that I think are in process. Our two-way street project is underway. That they're already putting in the traffic signals there. That will be completed before the end of the year. You're going to start seeing the road lane changes in June. So all of this is in process. But I understand the frustration. So I do think that it's certainly the prerogative of the City Council to take a look at the processes and whether they think they've been efficient. We've been doing the same thing. But I would ask people to recognize that we have come in and immediately put some transparency into place. We have immediately put some process into place to move some of these projects forward more quickly. And I'd love for people to give that a little bit of time. And we'll see how that process goes. But certainly, I understand the concerns from the City Council.
Lori Boyer was actually on the program yesterday. She was in talking primarily about the two-way street issue, but she also addressed some of the delays that are baked into the process.
Yeah.
This is not a new plan. This has been on the books for decades. So we're seeing it. But when we see it on our side, at the application side or the start of a project, it's 2 or 3 or 4 years before the public sees it.
So there are delays that exist. But is there a sense, having given your 10-month review, that there is enough in the pipeline that the DIA has approved, is moving forward, that those changes that she says, you know, takes 2 or 3 or 4 years before the public sees it are actually going to start being seen?
They must be. And this is one of the discussions that we've had. I think there need to be specific goals set. I think we need to see specific progress. We need to put some you know, things in place where we say we need to be here at this point and here at this point and here at this point, so that people can actually see the progress. As you know, we've put together transparency dashboards so that people can see where things are in the city, and we're opening up new fronts on those every single week. So yes, I think there are a couple of projects, the Gateway project being one, and the related project, which we will see a term sheet on, which is the South Bank project of the tower. The related group is one of those groups that just like Brian Mull and the folks that he brings into the process, there are some people who bring others with them.
Mm-hmm.
And when people see these folks are engaged, they want to engage. So I really do think we are making progress on that front. But I can promise you this, and Lori would be the very first person to tell you this. I am literally, and Melissa is constantly on the phone every day saying, where is this? Where is this? Where is this? Where is this? There's going to be a sincere, and already is a sincere effort to make sure that things are moving forward more quickly.
We've got a call from John on the South Side. Good morning, John. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, Ann, and thank you for taking my call. And good morning, Mayor Deegan. It was great to see you yesterday out at the beach.
Good to see you, too.
Yes, and let me just say, Ann, we got to get you a shirt. And Mayor Deegan, someone's working on a shirt for you. So just look for something in
wow.
the coming weeks.
Terrifying. Okay.
Now you've actually made the big time, Ann.
That's how you know. That's the mark of success.
What I just wanted to share with you, and, you know, I did participate in your infrastructure committees. And one of the big things, in my opinion, you know, why our city is lacking so much, and that is access to our waterways. It is the worst access I think I've ever seen and experienced. And let me just also say, too, that the biggest thing, and with Lori Boyer mentioning how it's years in the process, you know, I'll be speaking to a bill, 2024-0325, which is, you know, appropriating $200,000 to study septic tanks. And that's going to be a 2-year study. So just something like that. And let me just say, too, it's not going before waterways. So, you know, when we're doing these different studies and then all of a sudden changing the rules and BAMES, you know, that's what's it, you know, impeding, you know, Jacksonville to move forward, in my opinion.
John, thank you. I'm going to kind of wrap it up there. But yeah, I mean, waterway access is a huge deal in Jacksonville. It traditionally has been really hard to get to the water, on the water.
Well, it is a big deal, and it's one of the reasons that we want to make that a point of access in terms of our riverfront parks. I mean, it's important that we create opportunities for people to access those waterways and to activate them. And so I understand that is John's issue, and he is mm-hmm. he is always very, very, very adamant about that issue, and he's right.
Yeah.
So we do need to do more on that front. I also understand his frustration with another study. I have banned words like study.
Enough research, right?
Enough already. Let's go. Yeah.
We've got a call from Joe in Jacksonville Beach. Good morning, Joe. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. And thank you, Mayor Deegan, for taking my question. As a vegan, availability of fresh fruits and vegetables is very close and near and dear to my heart. But it's sad that in our great city of Jacksonville, we still have food deserts. We still have places where you cannot buy fresh fruits and vegetables at an affordable price. So what's your plan to eliminate the food deserts in Jacksonville? And would you please, as a mayor, sign the plant-based treaty to have plant-based foods easily and economically accessible to all of our great citizens in Jacksonville? Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe we may have taken a call from him the last time that I was on, I know that is a concern. I think I just talked a few moments ago about the fact that there is a grocery store that is planned for downtown as part of the Gateway project. So we're very excited about that. We're looking, I've talked extensively with Ashante Green, who's our sustainability manager, about ways in which we can address food deserts. And there are a number of different plans that way, from from urban farming and other issues to just creating additional pathways to make sure we do have fresh fruits and vegetables into all the neighborhoods that need them. But I do understand it's an issue. I am not familiar with the treaty that he was talking about, but I'd be happy to look at that.
You know, it's interesting. We were talking with Wayne Wood yesterday about a project on the east side, which is the old Debs
yes,
grocery store.
Absolutely.
Which is actually going to reopen as a grocery store
this
summer.
Yeah. And that's another area in which we've had a food desert. So I think you're going to see in fairly short order some of these places where we have had real challenges have a lot more access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And obviously, that's very important for the health of our community.
I want to just circle back a little bit to the topic of the downtown development scrutiny. How important is the makeup of this board, this special committee, and in terms of the direction that they take it? And are you satisfied with who has been appointed? We should say that it's the chair is going to be Kevin Carrico, the Rory Diamond is going to be the vice chair. Then Joe Carlucci, Reggie Gaffney Jr., and Chris Miller are the other city council members.
Yeah, I just found out about this yesterday afternoon. So I know about the makeup of the committee. I don't know about how it came about or what the process was for who was put on the committee. But as I said, I think that council has a prerogative to look at it. I'm not sure what focus they're going to take specifically beyond the fact that I think we all want downtown to move together. I think we all want that same thing. So I hope they'll be taking a look at it from just a standpoint of, are there any roadblocks there? Is there anything we could do more efficiently? What can we do to remove the friction if there is any? There are certainly things that we've looked at. One of the things that I have asked Lori to look at is how do we overcome the fact that when it comes to these high-rise developments, that we simply don't have the people here that do that work. So when a developer comes in and wants to put up one of those high-rises, they have to bring in people from out of town, which adds about 20% to the cost of doing that business. Oh. So there are a number of things. I can't tell you what the focus is because I just found out about it. But my hope is we're all focused on the same thing, and that is moving downtown forward in a more timely manner.
Yeah. But this is coming at a time when Lori Boyer's contract is being looked at by the DIA board, whether to extend it another couple of years. Mm-hmm. That decision, I think, is supposed to be made in May. Do you think that this is going to be disruptive for her tenure there?
Listen, I think that Lori is certainly used to all the voices, right? And I think that there are a number of things that it's important to look at. I can tell you that, you know, in talking to the DIA board, that they have been largely happy with the job that Lori has done. There are challenges that Jacksonville has that we have to overcome in the ways that we can overcome them, but we have to. We have to find a way to move those projects forward more quickly. She knows that. Whether the board decides to extend her for another year, another 2 years, whatever the situation is, I do believe that there will be accountability built into that, that there will be goals built into that for what we need to achieve in a timely manner. And that would be my hope and my expectation.
When I spoke to Council President Ron Salem last night, and he said, you know, regardless of what is happening with Lori Boyer and her contract, that part of the goal of this committee would be to set up expectations for whoever succeeds her, which could be, you know, one focus in addition to sort of looking at the process.
Well, I do think it's important, you know, and we've certainly been talking about this since I came into office. I think Lori has made it clear that the next couple of years it would be, you know, about what she would want to serve. And so we need to start succession planning regardless. And we've been focused on that as well.
We have a call or a question from Carol on the South Side. Go ahead, Carol.
Good morning, ladies. I'm concerned about the zoning board. And I don't quite understand how to communicate with them. They seem to have their own agenda, and I'm not exactly sure what it is. So, for example, a couple of years ago, they approved building a liquor store across the street from a school. And then there have been other things like that, like the storage facility in San Marco, which doesn't quite fit into the neighborhood. And in our area, there's a development that they're going to do adjacent to my subdivision. And I've been down there to talk to them, and they just I don't know. There just seems to be a communication barrier between the people that live in these areas and the zoning board itself. And I don't know how to overcome that communication barrier and communicate with them.
It's a good question, Carol. I mean, to be clear, there are a number of agencies that have a role in zoning. Sure. You know, it's not, there's not exactly a board. City Council has final approval, but it goes through a couple of planning commission.
Sure.
Who would you suggest somebody reach out to if they're looking at a, you know, a neighborhood zoning issue that they're not in, they do not want to like land in their neighborhood?
Well, first and foremost, I would say reach out to your city council person. That person is supposed to be charged with listening to you and trying to help you get what you want. So I'd say your district council person and your council person at large.
Yeah. And there have been a number of, you know, projects recently that have been approved by council that haven't really been wanted or desired by the communities. I mean, she mentioned the storage unit. The Brentwood liquor store was one that also created a lot of alarm, and also the, you know, the new city medical examiner's office has been pretty controversial.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the liquor store, I think you know that that we bought the liquor store, the city bought the liquor store, and that's going to become a business innovation center, small and emerging business center for the North Side. So we're excited about that, how that one worked out. But certainly she has a good point. I think when there are situations where the overlay or and it's not every neighborhood has one of those, right? But if the overlay says one thing, and the community is saying the same thing, it's interesting the way those things can sometimes turn out. So I understand the frustration.
We have an email from Jim. He said, in my humble opinion, as a governance expert, the problem is not with the structure of DIA or a focus on downtown. The mayor is right to support that. The problem is with the people, a CEO who did not have expertise in urban development and a compliant board that does what the CEO tells them to do. This is common to other agency boards in Jacksonville. Rarely do the boards do independent thinking or provide adequate oversight. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, we have some appointments to that board, which we have been very thoughtful about. I think it is very important for the board to be independent in the way that it actually can evaluate what is going on and how the process is going. I understand that frustration. I do. You know, I get appointments there. I think the council gets appointments there. So I would hope that any board would honestly evaluate the performance of the CEO. I can tell you that in talking with people that work with Lori Boyer every day from the development community, people who have watched her work have had high praise for a lot of what she does. I think that there have also been some challenges in terms of how the community feels they are being heard. But I think that these are things that the board needs to evaluate. And I have said repeatedly with all of these boards, that's their job. And I don't want to put myself in the position of being on that board when they are the folks that are there watching that work every single day.
I want to shift gears and talk about a national political issue that's coming to town with the vice president. So tomorrow, abortion, you know, some would say, becomes effectively illegal in Florida.
That's right.
Most women are not aware that they're pregnant at 6 weeks, which is the new limit. Do you have a public position on abortion?
Yes, certainly. I am pro-choice. I believe that bottom line for me is however you feel about abortion. I simply do not want the government deciding those issues for a woman. That's the bottom line for me. To me, it is absolutely an invasion of privacy for a woman. And so I know there are strong beliefs around abortion. I respect those beliefs. I simply do not want the government involved in those decisions.
I've heard a new frame on that debate, particularly out of states that have become so restrictive on abortion that they're actually referring to it as forced gestation, which is kind of a different spin. But people who are basically required to carry to term. And effectively not allowed to have an abortion. But so Vice President Kamala Harris is here Wednesday. She says that the stakes of the election are rooted in reproductive freedom across the country. It's obviously going to be a big issue. Now, I don't know that we have details of her appearance, but are you going to be there? Do you know where, when she's going to speak?
I don't have full details on exactly when she's going to land or where she's going to speak, but I will be there. The White House advance team will let us know those details as soon as they have them. But I will be there with her. I will be speaking. I think this is an issue on which I want to say close to 80% of the public agrees, that regardless of their feelings about abortion, they do not want the government involved in that decision. We have very strong privacy rights here in the state of Florida. And I think most women and most men would say that they would like that decision to be in the hands of a woman as opposed to the government.
Right. We have a call from Mark on the West Side. Good morning, Mark. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Mayor, just a couple of real quick topics. I'm sure you don't hear this enough or at all, maybe, but I am one citizen of Jacksonville who doesn't want you to spend one single dime on giving a billionaire any of my taxpayer money to build a stadium that I don't use. But my main point I wanted to ask you about is, why do we have a development authority to begin with? I mean, if this were some, Nome, Alaska, I'd be there for you. But this is Jacksonville, Florida. We have uncontrolled, but we have just rapid growth. Everybody in the world wants to live here, apparently. And I just see it throwing good money after bad. I mean, we're developing left and right. I mean, if you want to get an agency that guides some of that, fantastic. But I think we should be charging for growth. I think we should, somebody comes to us and says, hey, we want to put a building here. We should say, that'll cost you $10,000. I think you said something about 80% a little while ago. I think 80% of people around here don't want growth anyway, and yet we're encouraging this in all the wrong way. So, I'd say do away with them or make it more of an oversight committee and leave my money alone.
Well, I can just tell you this. I did not create the Downtown Investment Authority. It certainly is an authority that takes power away from the mayor and the council, frankly. I mean, the council, we have ultimate say over what actually it goes through. But at the end of the day, I think that authority was developed specifically so no particular mayor or council would have their particular vision imposed on downtown. I think that is how that was initially created. So look, I don't know if it would have been something that I would have created to begin with, but that's where we are. And I personally believe that the development of downtown is incredibly important. And if you are a person who is concerned about growth in Jacksonville, let me tell you where we can afford growth. Let me tell you where growth would be really good for us. That would be infill into our downtown and urban areas. So if you are a person who is concerned about clogging up our roadways or having too many people in all of your neighborhoods, I will tell you that downtown is a place that you should support. And I am absolutely committed to making sure that we have places for people to live, work, and play downtown.
I mean, infill has been also part of your resiliency strategy. It's not just an economic thing.
You bet. I mean, look, we have learned with our brand new report that we have out, this 2050 plan for resilience. We have learned that if we continue with the growth patterns that we have right now in our city, that we are going to have thousands and thousands of people who are in a place where they're really going to have a tough time living. They're going to be in a floodplain. Their houses are going to be underwater. And so we have to drive people and growth to the places where the development makes the most sense resiliency-wise and for our economic development. And downtown is a prime place for that.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Mayor Donna Deegan in our monthly Ask the Mayor segment. And you can email questions. You can send notes via social media. You can email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, or you can call us live at 904-549-2937. So Mark raised the question of, billions and billionaires, and we're obviously talking about stadium negotiations. Mm-hmm. So right now, the framework we're hearing is that a deal could be in the council's hands by mid-May. Sound accurate?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so the idea is to have that plan for the council's auditor to kind of go through the plan and vet it for the council, and meanwhile have a couple weeks of public meetings.
Well, if you recall, also the council hired their own person to vet the deal as well. But yes, our job is to create the deal, and their job is to fund it, to approve it. And so we have been working with the Jaguars very, very well over the last several months. I will say that I think those negotiations have gone very, very well. They have they've been wonderful to negotiate with, frankly. I think anyone who came into this process and saw where we were initially at the beginning of the process, I think should look at this once we bring this out and say there's a lot that the Jaguars have come to, and I think we have too, and it's a very good deal. We're not completely there yet, but within the next couple of weeks, we should be.
And so there are, you know, a few elements, and it's a complicated project, but, you know, initially they were talking about this development zone that they wanted the city to partially fund, plus the stadium renovations, and we were talking something in the neighborhood of $2 billion, and they wanted the city to pay half. Mm-hmm. And now what we're hearing is they're not probably going to be asking for that additional surrounding development component. It's just going to be focused on stadium renovation. But we're hearing that the city could be paying maybe 75% of that. Has the number in terms of what the city would be obligated to pay, has that significantly changed even as the project shape has changed?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk specific numbers with you on this, Anne, until it's all done. But I will tell you that that the goals that I set when we went into this have been met. I am very pleased with where we are. And frankly, I have been most excited for myself. I mean, I think when you look at the stadium itself, and I'll tell you why the surrounding development was largely taken out simply because of the CRA, and it became very complicated to figure out how to put that into this agreement. So it is largely focused on the stadium, but the part that I have been most involved in has been the community benefit agreement. I've had the negotiating experts. I've given them marks that I want to hit, and they've done that. And beyond that, where I have spent the most of my time has been in what do I want for the community out of this, in addition to what will happen with the stadium itself, which I continue to believe will be a huge economic driver, not only for the east side, but for the riverfront and for all of downtown. So I am very excited about that particular portion of the agreement. And I think that the Jaguars are as well.
And you were saying the CRA, that's the Community Redevelopment Agency that, mm-hmm. that is part of downtown.
That's right.
And so that project had some conflicts with how that's operated or how that is envisioned.
Well, it's tough to put, you know, you normally have to look at an RFP in situations like that for what you're going to do for specific pieces. Right. So it would be hard to put all of that into this one agreement. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand. Does that mean to you, though, that project may yet come to fruition, or that because of the CRA, it probably will not?
No, I think certainly it is the goal of the Jaguars, and certainly for our downtown development folks, that we want to develop that entertainment center. That's just going to have to be a separate process.
I gotcha. We have a call from Tom in Ponte Vedra. Good morning. Go ahead with your question.
Mayor, my name is Tom. Moved here in 1995 and worked downtown. One of the first things I heard on the radio when I moved here was we've got to develop our downtown infrastructure, and we've got to bring people into downtown.
That's right.
I called the talk show just as I'm doing now and suggested, why don't you take a look at what they've done in Cincinnati? They have restaurants on the water. Cincinnati is a river town just like Jacksonville is a river town. The response I received from the mayor at that time was, that's a good idea. We are aware of that. One of the things you have to do is provide a safe downtown. My wife and I, about 13 years ago, were mugged in broad daylight downtown going to the symphony. That was quite alarming, to say the least. My question to you is, why since 1995 that I've been here, why has nothing concrete ever been done to develop downtown? It's nothing but talk, but no action.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, Tom, you know, I think you heard when I was running for office, one of the things that I said was that I was frustrated by the pace of development downtown. So as I said, when I came in, I put several metrics into place. We have brought in a wonderful person into planning, into public works. We have created what I believe will be a transparency dashboard that will allow people to not only see what we're doing in real time, but also that will allow us to be able to, as people can see, I think there will be additional incentive to make sure those things happen more quickly. We have put several projects on what we have called the chop chop list that we have accelerated by various means to make them happen. So as I said, I've been here for 10 months. If you do not see a very different landscape and a whole lot more cranes downtown within the next year, I will allow you to take me to task, but you got to give me a little time. I am doing all the things that I can do. I cannot and am not as I've been reminded occasionally by some folks on the city council, I am not a dictator. So I can't move everything forward by myself. I have to have a willing council who will spend the money and get the things done. But I am in every way that I can. You may trust me on this. And like I said, if you do not see things come to fruition in the next year, you can call me back and say, Mayor, you told me this and things are still sitting where they're sitting. I am hoping you're going to see a whole lot of activity. And I have every confidence that you will be, because we have put things in place to make sure that happens.
We've got a call from Eugene on the north side. Good morning, Eugene. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, good morning. Congrats, Mayor. Seems like you've been in office a lot longer than 10 months.
Is that good or bad? I'm not sure.
Well, there's so much activity going on. I mean it in a positive way.
Okay, thank you.
It's busy. My question is, do we currently have a active JSEP program for contractors, minority contractors in particular, in Jacksonville? And is it active?
Yes, we absolutely do.
Let's explain. This Jacksonville is small business.
Small and emerging business is what JSEP is. We have brought in a young man named Gregory Grant, who has just really gone gangbusters to activate our JSEB. We are having meetings all over the city, workshops for small and emerging businesses, for minority businesses as well, to create the opportunity for people to connect. As I said, we are creating the innovation center that will be at the site of where that former liquor store was. Absolutely a very activated and active JSEB. So if you have not had the opportunity to attend one of those workshops, if you have not had the opportunity to connect with Gregory Grant and his department, please do so. There is so much innovation going on there, and that's just one of the places that we are. There will also be an innovation center at the new Phoenix development that's in that neighborhood. That is a department that I was absolutely laser focused on activating when I came into office, and Greg has done an amazing job of doing that.
We've got a call from Joshua in San Marco. Go ahead, Joshua.
Hey, good morning, Mayor Deegan.
Good morning.
I wanted to thank you and also one of your colleagues, Pat McCullough, just on a job well done. I think it was about a year ago. We went to that really amazing inauguration, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you so much.
I've got two daughters. You're welcome. It's just been a pleasure because you want to work with all involved. You want to listen. I gave Pat McCullough a call because I saw some trash piling up somewhere, and Pat McCullough got right back to me. She said, "Where is it?" and gave me a timeline on how to accomplish it. So I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And could we just end right there? I think that's just perfect. No, thank you. I really appreciate that. Pat is amazing, as is, frankly, I think my entire team. We have a team of very, very motivated, engaged people, and they understand that job one is to bring the community into City Hall. We've been saying that since day one. And so our outreach has been constant. And frankly, they understand that for me, accountability is job one. We have to make sure that people understand what we're doing and why we're doing it, why it takes as long as it's taking. And that's why we put those transparency dashboards into place, which will only get stronger as people use them. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it. And I know Pat and the rest of the team does too.
I want to ask you a little bit about money issues, because we're seeing that the tax revenue is going to be less than expected. That last year there was a $1.75 billion in revenue for the city, which was up nearly $200 million from the year prior. But this year we're looking at maybe $95 million less.
I think that's probably right.
So how do you, how do you scale back from what we funded this year? How do you approach that?
Well, I don't think it's a scaling back. I think it is. I think it's a matter of establishing priorities, which is exactly what we have been doing. We have a lot going on right now. Obviously, we have our police and fire negotiations that are happening, and those folks both deserve and will receive substantial raises.
They're asking for about a 17% raise. Is that right?
I don't remember the exact number, but I know that we've made great progress in those negotiations, and I'm hopeful that that's going to be coming to fruition soon. But you talk to people around the city, and they talk about how you heard the caller earlier. They want to feel safe. It's important. We've got a very, very large city, 850 square miles, and so it's hard to make sure that everybody feels that they have enough officers in their neighborhood. We hear about speeding and all those things, all the things that people get frustrated about. But that's a big important thing that we're doing this year. So that's a priority. But I think in terms of just the projects that we're going to fund, I just think it's every year it's the same thing. You move the projects that are the priority to the top. Affordable housing has moved to a very prominent place in what we're going to fund. We've proposed $10 million that will be then connected to public-private money that will raise us another $30 million that will eventually become a $120 million fund over time to fund affordable housing. So a lot of the keys here, Anne, come down to, here's what we can do with public money. How can we leverage that to bring in public-private partnerships where we can bring in business and philanthropic partners that will help us to maximize the money? I think that's going to be key for us as we go through this process.
We've got a couple of questions on Facebook that are similar in nature. So Jane on Facebook says, please ask the mayor why we don't replicate the successful Houston homeless program with empty office spaces and potential development of the Trio, meaning the Laura Street Trio. With vision, could we not replicate the successful Houston homeless program model? And then Martha from Facebook saying, if we're closing schools around the city, can some be used for low cost and homeless housing? Good to see Mayor Deegan.
Look, we are absolutely looking at every one of those options. There have been a number of cities that have had very successful programs. Houston is one of them. Denver is another one. Reno, Nevada is another one. And we've brought in folks from a number of different areas to discuss, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation for every community, but there are some innovative approaches. And frankly, with the new law that we have coming down the pike from the legislature that will require us to find places for the folks who are currently on the street, we want to make sure that is in line with our values here in Jacksonville. So we understand that people want to feel safe on the streets. We also understand that there are situations where it is extraordinarily difficult if you don't have those 24/7 wraparound services for people that they need. So that's what we are in the process of doing right now. We have a very, very strong commitment to making sure that by the time that law rolls around in January, that we are maybe October. I'm trying to remember, but either way, the goal for me is to make sure that there are places, there is housing for everybody to be. I don't like the idea of a tent city. I'd prefer to find housing, whether it's in school, an old school, or in an unused building, or whatever it is. But we're looking in all of those cities. I think I've mentioned to you before, there's a project out of Reno called the Karma Project that includes all of that. There are wraparound services, but it also involves making sure that you're moving folks off of the streets. And I think all of that is going to be incredibly important. But please know that we are working on that. And also that works hand in hand with affordable housing. So all of what we are doing right now in terms of these partnerships on affordable housing, we've got 3,000 units that are going to be coming onto the market this year. This new program that we announced with the $10 million investment will give us 1,000 additional units. So it's all hand in glove, and we are working very diligently on those things.
You know, the homeless situation in Jacksonville is obviously, you know, a crisis, but when you look at other cities, it doesn't seem to be on the scale as a lot of other cities in terms of like the visibility of large scale encampments or people, you know, street camping.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense as to why we don't look quite like that?
Well, we don't look quite like that because we're a large spread out city, right? I mean, there's no city on the scale of Jacksonville. Let's be honest. Even Houston, there's just no city that's on our scale. I think for people that have lived here and just know Jacksonville, that doesn't give them much comfort. They don't like to see homeless people sleeping on the streets in the downtown. They don't feel safe walking around if that's the case. And I understand all that. So those are all things we are very, very focused on. But it requires us to be very intentional about creating the type of housing, mental health services, all those things that have to include the solution, unless you're just not going to care about folks' humanity. And I think we do in this city.
See if we can get a couple more calls in. May, go ahead.
Yeah, let me turn my radio down. Yes, I have a way to new for the city, but help the city. It's called
May.
It's called
May, you're breaking up on us.
People. Sorry. Better?
Try again. Yeah, go ahead.
The thought is to find people who are driving these legally fixed up cars that make them be very loud.
Gotcha. I'm going to put you on hold. So she's wondering about raising money by finding people who drive loud vehicles.
I don't know how much money we would raise that way, but I certainly I'm not a fan of loud vehicles, just like probably everybody else. But I didn't hear much of what she said, to be perfectly honest.
One quick call, Ruby, very briefly on the north side. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. I was calling because I think Mayor Deegan is doing an excellent job. I mean, like an excellent job. First of all, I'm just really thankful that we have a female mayor. And
thanks,
then one of the things that I've begun to realize in the time that she's been in office is, in my opinion, I don't think the city council members work with her the way that they could. So my suggestion to everybody that's listening is that when we vote the next time, we really have to think about our city council members as far as whether or not we want to keep them in office, because it is good to have a mayor that has a city council working with her. Because I heard the other young lady talk about the projects and how the city council, and I know there's a certain committee that votes on projects and make a decision. So my thought is, when I vote the next time, I'm definitely going to vote again
for
the person that I want to represent me.
We're going to have to leave it there, Ruby. Mayor Deegan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Ann. Good to see you as always.
You too. Stick around. We'll be back with a performance that casts light on inequity in the theater industry.
Amelia Island celebrates Fish to Fork on May 9th through 12th at Omni Amelia Island Resort, featuring fishing and culinary dock-to-dish specialties in a fun, interactive atmosphere. More info at ameliaisland.com/fishtofork.
Join WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great for Be My Neighbor Day at WJCT Studios on Saturday, May 11th. At this free festival, meet Daniel Tiger and friends, visit community helpers, sing and dance with Mr. Joe, create arts and crafts, and much more. Learn all about being a caring neighbor by reserving your spot today at wjct.org/events.
Classical 24 brings listeners beautiful music from around the world, featuring the best of classical music from the all-time greats to the newest composers and performances. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
In the shifting sands of industrial policy, chip makers have floated to the top of Washington's priority list.
This is one of the biggest construction sites I've ever seen.
Looks like an airplane hangar, except on, you know, steroids or something. It's enormous. I'm Kai Rizdal, on the ground in the Silicon Desert. Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Protests and encampments have sprung up on college campuses across the country. Hundreds have been arrested. Calls for universities to end their ties to Israel and for the U.S. to negotiate a ceasefire in Gaza are growing.
We made it clear, students here made it clear, that we're not going to accept that policy of repression and censorship.
What does this moment say about college leadership, free speech, and student protests? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Well, we're back now. I'm going to be talking with Players by the Sea participants in a new production that examines race. It's kind of a comedy drama. I'm joined now by its director, Zach Rivera. Welcome, Zach.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And actress Zonetta Marie, who plays Willetta Mayer in the play. So tell me, this is kind of a play within a play. Is that right? Isn't it?
Yes, it is right. It is a play within a play.
Yeah. And so the play within this play is called Chaos in Belleville. It's about a talented Black actress, but she's sort of at a turning point in her career. What's happening?
She is. So Willetta is used to being in musicals. She's used to, you know, being all over the stage, dancing and singing. And she has her opportunity to actually be in a serious role, playing a mother. And she's very proud of being able to get serious about her acting. And she comes into the theater excited without giving it away. But then she learns there's something she's going to learn about herself, and something in this play triggers her to make different decisions.
And there's some, I mean, it's a serious play. I mean, the topic is extremely serious.
Yes.
In terms of racial hatred. But there's also kind of a dynamic between her and the director of this play within a play.
Yes. So she's worked with the director in the past. So they have what she considers a fun, you know, good relationship in working in the theater. But she starts to see a different side of him in this particular play.
Mm-hmm. Zach, talk about the play within the play and staging that. Is it a special challenge when you're trying to discern between the one performance and the performance that the audience is watching?
It's definitely a unique challenge. But what I love about it is we get to really use the entirety of the space at Players by the Sea. So in the play that we are doing, Trouble in Mind, whenever we are out of our characters within characters, we use the entirety of the space. We have the director of the play within the play pacing the aisles. We extend the set and scenic elements out into the audience past the proscenium arch. And then whenever we are in the play within the play, we get into our positions as you would see a normal play. So
that's,
it's really cool.
That's an interesting conceit. Is that something that you developed on your own to approach this and kind of get the audience to feel the difference between the two sets?
Well, honestly, with anything I direct, I like to include the audience as much as I can. I like to make really immersive experiences, and this play lends itself to that so much with this device of the play within the play.
So let's talk a little bit about the playwright, Alice Childress. She herself was in the theater in the 40s before becoming a playwright and was an actress. How does her experience in the theater lend itself to the topic of the play within the play.
Absolutely. So this play, it's no secret that it's semi-autobiographical, I think. The character of Willetta Mayer is very identical to her own experience, Alice Childress's own experience in the theater. Willetta Mayer is asked at one point in the show to be okay with a watered-down message for white audiences to consume at this time on Broadway. And she was asked to make that same choice with this play. So there's a very interesting parallel that happens with her in real life and the character that she has made of herself.
That's interesting. And so what do we know about Childress and some of the setbacks that she faced in her own professional career?
Well, I can tell you this. She was very nearly the first Black female playwright on Broadway. But because she refused to water down her message to be palatable to an audience, that honor later went on to Lorraine Hansberry for A Raisin in the Sun.
No kidding. So a powerful voice in theater. How does it feel to embody that character and sort of remain faithful to the author and her experience as well as the character that you're playing?
Oh, it is so important for me to really project Willetta Mayer correctly. I have been through highs and lows of learning who Willetta Mayer is and what's important to her. And it is so pinnacle for me to make sure that I bring her full story, her full richness, her full intent, full circle every single night.
You have an incredibly worn version of the play in your hand.
I do.
It looks like it's been, the title is even worn off.
It is indeed.
Yeah. So it's been a work in progress. How can people see the performance?
Well, you can buy tickets on the Players by the Sea website. We open on May 10th and we run for 3 weekends.
Well, break a leg. It's great to have both of you here. Zach Zanetta, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
All right. And that's our program. We encourage your feedback and suggestions. You can send either to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed anything, you can catch our rebroadcast at 8 o'clock or find our entire archive at wjct.org or on your favorite podcast platform. The executive producer of First Coast Connect is David Luckin. Our show is produced by Stacey Bennett and directed by Brady Quorum. Join us again tomorrow when we speak with a woman whose foundation works to make swimming more equitable and accessible. I'm Ann Schindler. You've been listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.